Yes, I'm Faye Worry, and I'm Robert George Garner's daughter. It was a terrible war, and he must have went through hell, you know, like they all did. So, yes, it's good to think now that he's been recognised, like a lot of others probably will be too.
Well, Robert George Garner is fairly unique for us. He is one of the 20 known Aboriginal prisoners of war in the First World War.
A picture with an Aboriginal soldier, it's almost impossible to find. So I was very surprised. There was a picture from that man in his album.
That brother, Elias, we've now given him his due recognition, and he went to the Western Front. He fought on and off with his battalions, got rotated in and out of some units.
This year marks 100 years since the end of the First World War. In 1916, two brothers found themselves on the other side of the world in the fight of their lives. Their unique and inspiring story has rarely been told. This all changed in 2015 when a photo taken in a German prisoner of war camp of an Australian Anzac emerged online. The man in the photo was Private Robert George Garner. The photo would fascinate and baffle historians, inspire and shock his family, and ensure he and his brother's story would finally be told. Current estimates have just over 1,000 Aboriginal men serving in the First World War. Robert and his brother Elias were a part of this small but powerful group. Laws at the time discouraged people of a non-European background from enlisting. So before exploring the stories of these men, I feel it's important to find out how they and their peers managed to enlist in the first place.
My name's Michael Bell. I'm the Indigenous Liaison Officer with the Australian War Memorial. Yeah, it was a choice. There was no conscription in the First World War. In the fact that the change in the military order to 200 came as a response to the defeat of the second referenda on the subject of conscription that allowed what is colloquially known as the half-caste rule to come into place, where Aboriginal men that could prove they had one European parent were allowed to enlist.
Robert George Garner, age 24 years, 9 months, height 5 foot 6 inches, weight 135 pounds, complexion very dark, eyes brown, hair black, religion Church of England.
Now, that's, as with anything human, there is some subjectiveness to that. Doctors of the time would say, you're fine, you're healthy and fit and you're going to be a good soldier, in you go, despite the colour of your skin. Others just flatly refused and said, this man is unfit because of his Aboriginality. It varied from doctor to doctor. And what we can see anecdotally across the states and the amount of rejections per state came down to individual doctors.
Elias Edward McAllister, age 19 years. Height 5 foot 10 inches, weight 142 pounds, complexion dark, eyes brown, hair black, religion Salvation Army.
After gaining approval to enlist, Robert and Elias would soon begin their training as they prepared to join the Western Front. During the trip to Europe, both Robert and Elias would find themselves reprimanded by authorities. Elias would find himself in the ship's hospital for 2 weeks after his exploits while missing in action. Meanwhile, Robert's curiosity caught the better of him during a stopover in the South African capital of Cape Town.
I'm a member of the 13th Reinforcement, 17th Battalion. I marched with the troops to Greenpoint Common on the 6th. I was present when they halted, but I was not present at roll call after lunch. I went into Cape Town. Nobody gave me leave to go. I knew I was disobeying orders and committing breaches of discipline by breaking away, but I wanted to have a look around Cape Town.
Indiscretions aside, The efforts of these men cannot be diminished. Both threw their hand up to enlist. Both would serve at the front. Both would suffer injuries. But perhaps most importantly, both would return home. These men were brave, their efforts courageous, and their story inspiring. Unfortunately for Robert, his service was about to take an unexpected turn. He'd soon find himself on the other side of enemy lines. It was this moment which would start a chain of events which would take the best part of a century to unfold.
Well, Robert George Garneau is fairly unique for us. He is one of the 20 known Aboriginal prisoners of war in the First World War. Robert, as with everybody else, enlisted at the same time. We will never really understand his reasons for enlisting, but we presume it's the same as his non-Indigenous counterparts, to get a proper wage. At the time, Aboriginal men and women weren't paid fairly, and in the ADF or in the military they were. They received the same pay, equal pay, as their non-Indigenous counterparts. And for various reasons, Robert enlisted. He wasn't in for the Gallipoli campaign, but went to the reorganisation, and then from where went to the Western Front. He looked to go to Fromelles, captured at the Battle of Bullancourt, which is a part of the winter of 1916, and spent the latter half of his war in German prisoner of war camps, finding himself in Menden, German prisoner of war camp, and probably out onto the work parties, working 10 to 12 hours a day to provide labour for the German people. The camps were separated into officers and then other ranks, and the accommodation for the officers was fairly spacious, and the officers weren't compelled to provide labour. But the other ranks, in which unfortunately Uncle Robert falls into, is that he's out into the labour camp. So 6 days a week he'd be out working various jobs, mending roads or facilitating factory work, transportation. The industries that the soldiers who were at the front couldn't do, some of the 182,000 Commonwealth Dominions forces were providing. Now, the camps were not as healthy as they could well have been, and the food was short because you're in time of war, so they're out working hard and you're not getting appropriately fed, despite a lot of the soldiers writing back to the Red Cross saying that they are being properly fed and properly treated. It's a little bit of a misnomer because those letters have been written with the oversight of the German captors. The important feature for the Germans allowing us to contact their Red Cross was that it allowed Australian Red Cross packages to get to the troops, to the prisoner of the war, which sustained them in a monthly or sometimes bi-monthly provisions.
For Robert's brother Elias, a soldier still on the Western Front, the remainder of his service would be blighted by injury. But in a show of true determination, grit and courage, he would continue to return to the line.
Well, thankfully, we've now given him his due recognition, and as a standard soldier, he went to the Western Front. He fought on and off with his battalions, got rotated in and out of some units, had time on the front line and time away from the front line, and his experience garnered is now hopefully what we're trying to work on with the families to find out how that influenced the rest of his life. And what happened to him after the war, and what happened to his medals? Did he join the RSL? You know, did he apply for a soldier settlement grant? And then those types of issues that we now would like to work out with the family and help us to look at the man rather than the military service. His experience was that of the rest of the Australian troops that weren't POWs, which is unusual, but he was a frontline trooper, he was a private, and he had two or three involvements on the Western Front in some significant battles as part of his battalion and his unit. But he also had time away from the line, and as with the rotational basis of the military at the time, he ends up getting medically exempted because of neurosis, and his hands were shaking, which is not uncommon. It's a significant factor to show that he was involved, heavily involved in the war. He got injured twice, keeps coming back to the line, as any good soldier does, and his commitment, but finally it got the better of him.
I was blown up by a shell at Bullecourt. I was unconscious for 2 hours. I keep hearing all these noises in my head. I'm giddy and I have a splitting headache. I've still got this tremor all over my body and I can't even stand up.
A lot of the troops got it, not everybody did, but his case was recognisable that he was discharged medically because of it.
Initially, the stories of Robert's time as a prisoner of war were just that. They were stories. All this changed in 2015 when almost 100 years on, a photo would emerge.
My name is Ian Roftoft. I'm from Belgium. I'm a collector of pictures of the First World War. I found it on an auction website. And normally, when you see a photograph, the seller, he showed me some pictures, but not all of them. When I got it, I was surprised there was also a picture from an Anzac soldier. The pictures of Anzac soldiers, they're very hard to find. And a picture with an Aboriginal soldier, it's almost impossible to find. So I was very surprised there was a picture from that man in this album.
It's been now around for quite a number of years and it's quite famous and it causes a bit of discussion amongst our small research group and people of interest because we're not quite sure when and whether where it was taken because he has those beautiful tin shoes on and he's quite well kept. So there's some debate as to whether it was taken behind German lines or in the field in France. It's a stunning photo and he's a very good looking and he's a handsome, dignified man.
It was very moving, really, to see that because I didn't know too much about him being in prisoner of war camps because he was in a few different ones, apparently, and he was wounded and lost in action at one stage. Yes, it was all very, very moving, really. No, he'd be very worried, I think, about how it was all going to pan out.
I'm Roy Worry. I'm Faye's eldest child, and Robert George was my grandfather. It was just totally amazing, and the way it came to light was an interesting story in itself. It was because I'd been helping Helen Wood do a little bit of research on Elias and Robert George, and it was just not long after that the Belgian historian saw the photos and he sent a copy of the information and the letter to Helen and she passed it on to me.
We often hear about the troubles facing returned servicemen when they attempted to slide back into normal life once they returned home. Most would receive little recognition and face the same discrimination they experienced prior to their service. What seemed to be a common theme amongst these two men was that they rarely even mentioned their service. It was almost as if they didn't see it as anything special.
He was very sick when he came home. He used to sing and play his guitar, which he did in the streets, just to get a little bit of extra money, I suppose. Didn't hear him say anything about the war.
Dear sir, I'm writing to ask if you would kindly forward me a duplicate of my military discharge, which I have unfortunately lost. My particulars are as follows. Private R.G. Garner, 5015. Returned badge number 98779. Yours sincerely, Robert George Garner.
Prior to his death, Robert would make one last attempt to formally recognise his service, writing to the commanding officer to request a copy of his service records. 75 years on, and the renewed interest in his story would lead his daughter to reinvigorate the search for her father's grave. In a bittersweet moment, she would finally be able to say her goodbyes. However, she would soon realise there was not one mention of his service to the country all those years ago. A man who served on the Western Front alongside his brother, a man who was captured and taken as a prisoner of war, would be buried in a grassy field with no mention of his service to the country.
Yes, we did have a couple of roses or something that we'd bought at the little kiosk and put there. But of course, it was an unmarked grave. That was a bit sad. But anyway, that's going to be fixed up now.
After trying all different sources, we finally got onto veterans, and they, as soon as I mentioned prisoner of war, there was no question. And they just said, "Oh, well, why didn't you say that?" And it was just sort of was all over and done with within a fortnight. It still hasn't been addressed yet, but you know, the action's going to be taken. It's going to be cemented in the headstone, and Mum was able to choose a lot of the wording. A lot of it is standard and can't be altered, though.
These brothers were just two men in a defence force of thousands. They were two men, a part of the ever-unfolding story of Indigenous military service. Their story deserves to be told. They were brave, they were strong, and they were courageous. To me, they're an inspiration. To me, they're a source of strength. To me, they're my family.
They might not have known exactly what they were getting into or adventures in the world, but you know, I think reality soon returned when they came back. But yeah, it was an amazing courage for them, I'd say. Mm.
That feature was written and produced by Speaking Out producer Jay McAllister. You also heard from Faye and Roy Worry, Michael Bell and Ian Roof Hoft. Actors Mark Coles-Smith and Guy Simon were in there too.